Ever feel that pull, like something vast and mysterious calling you out there?
Mm-hmm.
We're diving deep into the world of Caspar David Friedrich.
Oh, yeah.
A painter who captured that feeling and seemed to live it.
What's remarkable about Friedrich is he wasn't just painting landscapes.
Right.
He was grappling with huge questions about humanity and nature.
Yeah.
Using nature as his guide and Saxon Switzerland as his muse.
And for anyone who hasn't had their coffee yet, Saxon Switzerland isn't some off-brand Swiss Alps.
No.
It's this region in Germany known for incredible sandstone formations, misty forests, and dramatic Elbe River views.
Right.
It's the kind of place that makes you want to write poetry, or at least take a really long hike.
It was practically Friedrich's second home.
Really?
He lived in Dresden, but he'd escaped to Saxon Switzerland constantly. This was the late 1700s, early 1800s.
Okay.
A time when finding spiritual solace in nature was a big deal.
Yeah.
Especially for artists like Friedrich, who were part of the Romantic movement.
Okay, so before we get lost in the fog of Romanticism, can you unpack that a bit?
Sure.
What was it about this movement that drew artists to these wild places?
Imagine a world on the cusp of massive change.
Okay.
The Industrial Revolution, political upheavals.
Right.
This feeling that things were speeding up, becoming disconnected from nature.
Yeah.
The Romantics, they pushed back against all that.
Hmm.
They believed in the power of emotion, individual experience, and above all,
yeah,
the awe-inspiring, sometimes even terrifying power of nature.
So instead of factories and crowded cities, they found inspiration in rugged mountains, stormy seas.
Yes.
And yes, those misty forests of Saxon Switzerland.
Exactly.
And that's where our sources come in.
Okay.
They're not just about pretty pictures. They're about how Friedrich used these landscapes to explore those big romantic ideas.
And what's fascinating is we have a chance to retrace his steps. Literally.
Oh, wow.
2024 marks Friedrich's 250th birthday.
Okay.
And Saxon Switzerland is going all out.
Really?
We're talking exhibitions, themed hiking trails, even painting workshops where you can learn to see those landscapes through his eyes.
Sign me up for that workshop. I've always wanted to capture that wandering through an ancient forest and pondering the mysteries of the universe vibe.
Yes.
But first, we should probably introduce the man himself.
Okay.
Caspar David Friedrich, born in 1774.
Yes.
He wasn't born with a paintbrush in his hand in front of a dramatic vista, was he?
Not quite. He was actually one of 10 children born in Greifswald, Germany.
Wow.
And while he showed artistic talent early on, it wasn't until he started studying art formally, first in his hometown, then in Copenhagen.
Right.
That his fascination with landscape painting really took hold.
And it seems like moving to Dresden in his late 20s was a turning point.
It was.
It had a thriving art scene, but more importantly,
yeah,
it put him within striking distance of Saxon Switzerland.
Exactly.
It's like the region itself whispered, go on, paint me.
It certainly captivated him.
Yeah.
While he painted other subjects,
yeah,
his landscapes, especially those featuring Saxon Switzerland, those are the ones that still resonate today.
Mm.
He was drawn to the region's dramatic rock formations, its misty valleys,
right,
its sense of timeless grandeur.
It's like those landscapes weren't just backdrops. They were characters in his paintings.
Yes.
Take his most famous work, Wanderer Above the Sea of Fog.
Ah, yeah.
It's the quintessential romantic image.
It is.
This lone figure perched on a precipice, gazing out over a sea of mist.
Right.
As if contemplating the vastness of existence.
It's powerful, even a bit unsettling, which is classic Friedrich.
And here's where it gets really cool.
Okay.
That's not just any random cliff the wanderer is standing on.
Yo.
It's actually the Hirschberger Kaiserkrone,
yeah,
a real peak you can hike to in Saxon Switzerland.
You can literally stand where he stood.
Wow.
Feel that same wind in your hair.
Well, maybe not the same wind,
right,
but you get the idea.
It's a powerful example of how Friedrich's paintings weren't just figments of his imagination. They were rooted in real places, places he knew intimately,
yeah,
had explored, sketched, even lost himself in.
Okay, so we've established that Saxon Switzerland was basically Friedrich's artistic playground.
It was.
But before we lace up our metaphorical hiking boots and explore specific locations,
okay,
can we talk about why this region held such sway over him?
Sure.
It wasn't just the scenery, was it?
No.
There was something deeper going on.
You hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
Remember, this was a time of immense change and upheaval.
Mm.
The Napoleonic Wars were raging across Europe.
Right.
And Friedrich himself even had to flee Dresden for a while.
Really?
Seeking refuge in Saxon Switzerland.
Wait, really? He was literally escaping war and finding solace in those landscapes.
He was.
That adds a whole other layer to his paintings.
Absolutely. So when you see those brooding skies, those solitary figures dwarfed by nature's grandeur.
Right.
It's not just aesthetic choice.
Yeah.
It's reflecting a very real sense of turmoil and uncertainty,
mm-hmm.
but also a yearning for something solid, something eternal.
Mm.
And in the face of those timeless mountains and forests, he found it.
It's giving, finding refuge in nature's embrace.
Yes.
And that's exactly the kind of experience those hiking trails based on Friedrich's life are designed to offer, right?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Like stepping back in time, retracing his steps,
mm.
both literally and figuratively.
Okay.
You have the Mahler Weg, which translates to painter's way.
Okay.
116-kilometer trail mm-hmm. that winds past dozens of spots he painted.
That's a lot of artistic inspiration to soak up.
It is.
But they also have shorter trails for us mere mortals.
Okay. There's the Caspar David Friedrich Weg.
Okay.
A 15-kilometer path that follows his actual escape route from Dresden to Krippen during the war. Imagine the things he must have seen, the emotions he must have felt walking that same path.
You can practically feel the weight of history, right?
You can.
And speaking of weighty experiences, let's talk about some of these must-visit spots.
Okay.
First up, the Bastei.
Yes.
Which sounds like a delicious pastry.
Yes.
But is actually something even better.
The Bastei is this incredible rock formation overlooking the Elbe River.
Wow.
It's incredibly dramatic with these towering sandstone pillars and these sweeping views.
Mm.
Friedrich painted it multiple times, most notably in his 1823 work, Rocky Landscape.
And the best part is it's one of the highlights of Malerweg Etappe 2, a particularly scenic section of the Painter's Way.
Yeah.
So you can be walking along, admiring the view, and then bam, you're standing in the exact spot where Friedrich set up his easel over 200 years ago.
I love it.
It's like stepping right into one of his canvases.
And that's just the beginning.
Oh, there's more.
There's the Odewalder Fell Center, this stunning natural sandstone arch that captivated so many romantic artists.
Mm.
It's like nature's own grand cathedral.
Oh.
And Friedrich was so drawn to it, he spent a whole week living in the valley below just to soak it all in.
And when you know it, you can hike through that very valley?
You can.
The Odewalder Grind on Malerweg Etappe 1?
That's right.
It's like they designed these trails specifically for art history buffs.
It seems so.
But there's a personal connection here too, right?
Yeah.
Friedrich's escape to Krippen during the Napoleonic Wars.
Krippen was more than just a refuge for Friedrich.
No.
It became a source of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed with a friend there.
Right.
And while it was undoubtedly a stressful time, he still found solace in sketching the surrounding landscapes. In fact, Krippen is where he created some of his most moving works.
It's amazing how adversity can sometimes fuel creativity, isn't it?
It is.
And speaking of amazing, we have to talk about the new memorial they just unveiled in Krippen, marking the start of the Caspar David Friedrich Weg.
Oh, wow.
They even have those information panels along the trail showing his actual sketches of those very locations.
It's a testament to the enduring power of his work.
Yeah.
And the way it continues to draw people to these landscapes.
Mm.
But Krippen is just one stop on our journey through Friedrich's Saxon Switzerland.
Right.
We've got more breathtaking spots to uncover, but sadly we're out of time for part one.
Don't worry, we'll be back soon with even more of Friedrich's haunts in part two.
It's going to be good.
Trust me, you won't want to miss it.
Yeah.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the world of Caspar David Friedrich.
Last time we were practically lacing up our hiking boots, getting ready to retrace his steps through Saxon Switzerland.
Right.
And I think what's so compelling is how these weren't just casual strolls for Friedrich.
Right.
These hikes, these encounters with nature, they were like fuel for his artistic fire.
It's like he saw something in those towering cliffs and misty valleys that most of us just miss.
Yeah.
A kind of hidden language speaking through the landscape.
Exactly. And sometimes he even found that language echoed in the company of fellow artists.
Oh, really?
Take the Amselgrund, for example, this beautiful valley with the Amsel Fall waterfall.
Okay.
It's stunning. But in Friedrich's watercolor, Rocks on a Forest Path, he focuses on this odd rock formation in the background called the Honigstein.
And of course, this Honigstein is also a stop on one of those themed trails we talked about.
Naturally, you'll find it on Malerweg Etappe 2, not far from the Bastei.
Okay.
And it's fascinating to see how Friedrich takes this almost ruin-like shape.
Right.
and uses it to create a sense of depth and mystery in the composition.
Huh. Interesting.
It's as if he's saying, look closer, there's more here than meets the eye.
It's like this optical illusions where you see one image then another.
Right.
Only in Friedrich's case, both images are hinting at something deeper. Something about the power of nature, the passage of time, all those big romantic themes.
Precisely. And sometimes those themes played out against a backdrop of, well, let's just say Friedrich wasn't always alone in his appreciation of Saxon Switzerland's beauty.
Okay.
The Kuhstall, for instance, was quite the tourist attraction even back then.
Wait, seriously?
It seems so.
They had must-see natural wonders in the 1800s, too.
The Kuhstall, which translates to cowshed, is this enormous natural sandstone arch, the largest in Saxon Switzerland.
Wow.
And even back then, people would flock to see it, even carving their names into the rock.
I'm glad they've put a stop to that.
Right.
Can you imagine if Friedrich had to compete with graffiti artists for prime sketching spots?
It does make you appreciate those pristine landscapes even more, doesn't it? And speaking of appreciating, Friedrich himself actually sketched the Kuhstall around 1818 while on a hike with his wife and some artist friends, including Carl Gustav Carus, another prominent romantic painter.
So it's not just solitary contemplation, it's a group outing with other artistic souls.
It was.
It makes you wonder what they talked about, those romantic artists, as they hiked through those forests and valleys.
Right.
Yeah.
And today, you can recreate that same outing minus the sketching, unless inspiration strikes, of course.
Right, of course.
There's a fantastic hike from nearby Sebnitz that takes you right to the Kuhstall.
I love how these trails allow you to walk in the footsteps of giants to experience those same landscapes that fueled their creativity.
Yeah.
It's like tapping into a different pace of life, a different way of seeing the world.
It's a good reminder that these places weren't just backdrops for paintings.
Right.
They were living, breathing landscapes that people lived in, traveled through, found meaning in.
Yeah.
And speaking of journeys, we have to talk about Pirna.
Ah, Pirna.
Yes.
From what I gather, it wasn't just a pretty town on the Elbe. It was like the gateway to Saxon Switzerland for travelers coming from Dresden.
Right.
And for Friedrich, who lived in Dresden, it must have held a special significance.
It was a symbolic threshold.
Okay.
Imagine leaving behind the city's noise and bustle and suddenly finding yourself surrounded by those dramatic cliffs and forests.
Yeah.
It's no wonder Pirna captured his imagination.
He probably sketched it 100 times knowing him.
At least once that we know of. Early in his career, he did a detailed sketch of the Elbtor, the old city gate.
Mm.
Sadly, the gate was torn down in the mid-1800s. But thanks to Friedrich's work, we still have a glimpse of what it looked like, what it represented.
It's like he preserved a piece of history with his art.
He did.
And speaking of preserving things, let's not forget all those exciting events happening in 2024 for Friedrich's 250th birthday.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be big.
We've touched on exhibitions and workshops, but what about those guided tours?
Yes.
I imagine those are pretty special.
Absolutely. Imagine having an expert guide walk you through those landscapes, pointing out the exact spots that inspired certain paintings, sharing insights into Friedrich's techniques and influences.
It's like having a personalized art history lesson, right? Where it all happened.
I know, it's amazing.
And it really highlights something we've been talking about. That connection between the artwork, the artist's life, and the actual place where it all came together.
It's one thing to see a Friedrich painting in a museum. It's another thing entirely to stand in that very landscape, feel the wind on your face, hear the bird song, and understand how those sensory details work their way into his art.
It's like the difference between reading a travel blog and actually packing your bags and getting on a plane.
Right.
One is informative, the other is transformative.
Exactly.
And speaking of transformative experiences, those articles you shared had some tempting itineraries for anyone looking to really immerse themselves in Friedrich's world.
They did.
There were options for 48 hours, even longer trips.
Yeah, for sure.
The 48-hour itinerary sounds perfect for a whirlwind art pilgrimage.
It does.
What were some of the highlights?
Well, they suggested starting with a ride on the historic Kirchnerstalbahn.
Okay.
Which is this charming old tram that winds through the Saxon Switzerland National Park.
So you're already setting the mood, slowing down, taking in the scenery. I can practically hear the tram rumbling along those tracks.
Yeah.
What's next on the agenda?
A hike, of course.
Of course.
They recommend starting with the Lichtenhainer Waterfall, which cascades down a series of rocky steps.
Okay.
Then continuing to the Kuhstall, that impressive rock arch we talked about earlier.
Okay, so we've got waterfalls, trams, massive rock formations. This is shaping up to be quite the adventure.
It is.
What about day two?
Day two is all about choices, which is always a good thing.
True.
For early birds, they recommend a sunrise hike to the top of the Lilienstein. Can you imagine those views as the sun crests the horizon, bathing those sandstone cliffs in golden light?
Okay, now that's worth setting an alarm for. But for those of us who might not be quite so sunrise inclined, what's the alternative?
No worries. There's a fantastic plan B.
Okay, good.
Hiking Malerwegetap 2.
Okay.
It's a longer hike, but you'll pass the Bastei, the Amselgrund, and even get amazing views of Hansteen Castle, which itself is worth a visit.
Okay, so we're talking world-class views, historic castles, trails that wind through forests straight out of a fairy tale. I'm starting to think 48 hours might not be enough, but this itinerary isn't over yet, is it?
Not quite. Day three brings us full circle back to Friedrich's wartime escape.
Okay.
They recommend hiking the Caspar David Friedrich Weg, starting in Krippen. It's a chance to retrace his steps, to see those same landscapes through his eyes, to understand how this experience of displacement and refuge might have shaped his worldview and in turn his art.
It's like each step along the trail is a step closer to understanding the man behind the paintings.
Exactly.
But sadly, we're out of time for part two.
Don't worry, we'll be back soon with a final thought-provoking nugget in part three.
Okay.
One that connects Friedrich's time to our own in a surprising way.
And we're back for the final part of our Caspar David Friedrich deep dive.
We've covered a lot of ground, haven't we?
We really have, from his art to those incredible Saxon Switzerland landscapes. We even mapped out our own Friedrich-inspired pilgrimages.
It's been quite a journey.
It has, but we've got one last nugget to uncover something that connects his time to our own in a way I wasn't expecting.
It's a fascinating detail, and it gets to the heart of this question of access to beauty, to nature, as a source of inspiration.
Okay, now you've got my full attention.
Remember how we've been talking about those amazing hiking trails, how they let you visit the same spots that inspired Friedrich's paintings?
Absolutely. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure through art history.
Well, imagine if those trails came with a catch.
A catch.
What if, to paint those views, to set up your easel in those exact spots, you needed a special permit?
Wait, seriously, like a landscape passport?
Precisely. In Friedrich's time, artists actually needed what was called a Landschaftspass to paint in certain areas of Saxon Switzerland.
Wow, that's wild. So it wasn't exactly a free-for-all. Even back then, you couldn't just wander in and start capturing those iconic vistas.
Not exactly. There were rules, regulations even then about who can paint where, and it makes you think, doesn't it? On the one hand, it seems a bit restrictive, but on the other, Friedrich was deeply concerned about the impact of human activity on these landscapes.
That's so true. He wasn't just interested in pretty pictures. He was grappling with these big questions about our relationship with nature, our responsibility to protect these places. So maybe those permits weren't so far-fetched after all.
And it raises a really interesting question for us today. Does limiting access, even in a small way, enhance the value of an experience? If those landscapes were easily accessible to everyone, would they have held the same allure, the same sense of mystery and wonder for Friedrich?
It's like that saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Or maybe you don't know what you've got till it's gone. If you have to work a little harder to experience something to earn that view, maybe you appreciate it more.
Exactly. And this idea of balancing access with preservation, it's even more relevant today as we grapple with the impact of tourism on our planet's most treasured natural spaces. It's something to think about as you plan your own adventures, whether it's following in Friedrich's footsteps or exploring a local park.
It's a delicate balance, isn't it? We want to share these incredible places, inspire others to connect with nature, but we also have to protect them, make sure they're around for future generations to enjoy.
And maybe that's the biggest takeaway from our deep dive into Caspar Friedrich. David Friedrich, he wasn't just a master of landscape painting. He was a visionary who understood the deep, sometimes contradictory relationship between humanity and the natural world. A world that can be both awe-inspiring and incredibly fragile.
It's a powerful legacy to leave behind. And on that note, we've reached the end of our journey. Well, for now at least, we hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity, inspired you to seek out those moments of awe and wonder in your own life, and maybe even grab a paintbrush and capture a little of that Friedrich magic yourself. Until next time, happy exploring.